As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Tame again.
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
An appreciation of Roy Keane's wheeling away, Guy Mowbray in the Croatian Unmentionables, For My Sins Corner in the Doldrums. How low down the pyramid can you be an armchair fan? The precise frequency of elite youth production to qualify for a conveyor belt of talent, the optimum number of goals that can be bagged, unearthing some early Peter Drury, and pinpointing the very moment that means we never see Premier League referees interviewed live on TV. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 215 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me for the adjudication panel today is Charlie Eccleshare. How's it going?
Very well. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Alongside you, of course, is David Walker. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I wanted to bring something to your attention at the top of the show. I'm just intrigued to see what your reaction will be. I've got a feeling that you might be annoyed by it, but we'll see.
Is it to do with wrestling?
Nothing to do with wrestling at all, no. So I was watching Portugal against Switzerland the other night in a pub near the office and went to the toilet. And for the first time in my life, somebody saddled up next to me at the urinal and went, "Sorry, mate, you're Mr. Football Clichés, aren't you?"
Whoa. Whoa. What's happened here? Have they done the "you look like you should have my voice" situation?
Well, I mean, I didn't get into the detail of the conversation, really, given the situation, because I was just finishing as he was starting the procedure. But I sort of went, and he sort of elaborated. I kind of humoured him a bit. But then he sort of said, "Oh, I love the podcast. You're very nice. Great to hear that he loves a podcast. Very nice man." But yeah, I knew as soon as he said, "You're Mr. Football," I couldn't quite say that. I couldn't admit that I was Mr. Football Clichés with authenticity, because obviously I am not. But I knew what he was saying.
So there is a member of the public out there at large who thinks that you are the brains and inspiration behind the whole concept of Football Clichés. Wow.
I think this is good for you, Adam. I mean, Dave's a far nicer guy than you are, so he's going to come away from it being like, "That Football Clichés guy, he's lovely. You should get
lovely
Dave
hair
to do your bidding."
Yeah, tall. He's everything I want to be. Fair play to you. Yeah, that could come in handy for me in certain situations, but I'm happy to let you have some of the limelight. Let's get on with the adjudication panel, shall we? I hope we've all enjoyed Roy Keane wheeling away in celebration after scoring in an ITV informal kickabout somewhere in Doha. Fantastic scenes, can we all agree?
Mm. Yes.
Let's take the wheeling away specifically, Dave. I mean, a lovely finish, you know, taking the conditions into consideration. But great Wheeling away. Like, an iconic celebration with the setting sun behind him as well. Tremendous stuff.
Yeah, a brilliant shot. I'd go as far to say that of all the things that I've seen from Qatar in terms of journalists, broadcasters, people sending photos of what a nice time they're having, this is the one that's made me the most jealous out of all. Right. I would love to have been a part of that game. It looks so fun. Because there will have been a few like production staff, like getting to play with Roy Keane and Micah Richards and all whoever else was playing, which is great.
They are giving it 110%. You can just see it on their faces as well. Definitely.
And yeah, great Wheeling away from Keane. Really good.
Charlie, everything about what I could see going on in that game reminded me of informal games between colleagues on a makeshift bobbly grass pitch near the office. And everything that's ever taught me says that that game definitely ended like 13-12 as well. That was like the deciding goal. No matter how many goals one team was up, it always ends up being a goal in it at the end, and he scored the winner.
It does have to be close. It is a fascinating phenomenon why that happens. Although I don't know, would Keane be sort of generous enough to allow that to happen? Because I feel that there has to be a certain level of goodwill almost on the part of the team who are battering the other.
It's a weird psychology. It's like a combination of like just a fragile sporting mentality. Like you let the other team back into it, and also like secretly you want it to be close. Like if you're like five goals up, you just sort of happen to let two in. Like subconsciously you think, well, it doesn't matter, it's fine, it's better if it's close. And then when it actually gets close, you don't want to lose. But you'd have
or
to
even more it. Strategic Adam yeah. Sometimes there's the if we're battering them too much, they're going to ask to swap players. I really don't want to have to swap players.
So Keane.
Yeah, let them back in a bit.
Keane is exactly the sort of player who, if he found himself on a team that was six goals down and that team who was winning offered to swap teams, he'd be like, no, absolutely
not.
Would
not go down well, yeah. 100%. Yeah. Really prickle him.
If that's one personality trait I share with Roy Keane, then I'm happy with it. I refuse to suffer that indignity. But great footballing scene as it was, it did make me wonder, did the AI Alan Smith have commentary for it? His artificial intelligence tentacles seem to be spreading all over this tournament. Surely Veritone Voice and Opta had partnered up for this one. Did they? Key.
Receives.
Goal. Oh.
Key.
Shoots.
It's a goal!
It's not looking good.
For the BBC. ZyTV.
Scores for the
13th
time after a shot
by Roy Keane.
Very nice.
Squeezing just that last bit of juice out of the AI Alan Smith sponge.
Oh, and in the grand manner.
Yeah, just tremendous scenes. I really do want to see a full-blown match between ITV Football and BBC Sport at some point during this tournament. What a clash it would be. Do you think Lineker would get involved, Dave?
Don't know whether Lineker... Because you never know with the ex-pros whether like some of them literally can't run anymore. Mm. They just can't do it. I think Shearer is one of those. I think Alan Shearer physically cannot go on a jog. I think his knees are completely gone, so he has to cycle or whatever. But like... I think Lineker probably would. He's still in good... Looks like he's in good nick.
ITV would have Hal Robson-Kanu. He'd still...
De Jong.
De Jong versus Keane. No, they'd be on the same team.
On the same team. God, what an engine room that is, by the way.
Yeah. I really hope there's more content like that on the way. Next up, this is from Matt Phillips and Billy et al. Here's Guy Mowbray nailing the twee Croatian equivalent of the unmentionables.
Vardio came out and... got taken out.
Took a blow in the Dubrovniks.
That's good.
It is good, isn't it? Good thinking. Good quick thinking as well. And he was sort of been going through his mental Rolodex of Croatian destinations. And Dubrovniks, just right up there, isn't it, Dave? It's perfect.
Really good. Really good. Always helps to have a sound knowledge of the geography of the countries you're commentating on.
If we were struggling for content, Charlie, I'd imagine we could have gone through all 32 countries and picked out the most suitable town to use as a kind of PG option.
That's a shame we don't, because that would be really fun.
More of an early tournament thing. Should we save it for 2026? Because we'll have 48 options then. And that's a whole episode.
That is a whole episode taken care of, yeah.
Don't discount any idea for a whole episode. you had something else that you'd spotted during Croatia-Japan.
Yeah, I wanted to put to you guys, actually, that Guy Mowbray said. He described Luka Modric as the great man. And my ears, it jarred a little bit, because I feel like the great man should be reserved for a very, very small selection of players. And I know Modric, he's won ton of Champions Leagues. He's a Ballon d'Or winner. Is he the great man? I don't know. I feel like the great man is sort of Messi, Pele, Maradona. Maybe Zidane at a push. Luka Modric, the great man?
I think you're onto something, because, I mean, does Modric kind of bestride football in the way that those true greats do? Maybe we'll only maybe appreciate him 20 years down the line when he sort of pops up in the stands at World Cups in the posh seats. Would he be the great man then? Maybe
that's,
not.
I guess that's the question as well, is can you... Yeah, I mean, as a current player, can you be the great man? I mean, I guess Messi probably, but that does feel like something reserved maybe for when you're retired.
He has won a Ballon d'Or, hasn't he?
Yeah.
On that point, I'd say players who win sort of a Ballon d'Or out of nowhere in the middle of an era don't tend to get remembered as greats. I have to say, sort of random one-off Ballon d'Or winners.
It was a post-World Cup Ballon d'Or, wasn't it, really?
It was. It was a significant one because it broke up the hegemony, but the Messi-Ronaldo hegemony. So it was significant.
But it was annoying,
wasn't
it? It's annoying that it did that from a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it is probably a little bit of a stretch, but I think he is moving. He's moving into that territory. The fact that he's still sort of playing, he's still playing well. He's won a lot. He's got that sort of sheen of the Real Madrid, the Ballon d'Or. Like, he's not far off.
No, he's on the way.
Yeah.
I guess he doesn't really need a kind of crowning moment. I mean, he's had enough of those for Real Madrid. Maybe he's still just slightly nearer to little magician for me than great man. Because we don't know much about him in a sort of personality sense. He's not a statesman of the game either. So that, I think that helps. Like, he's not a Figo-esque kind of...
No.
Character who sort of strides about and represents things. He's just little Luka Modric.
I'd put him on a level like Xavi and Iniesta, and I'm not sure either of them are the great man. If they were shown.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Maybe it's because being small doesn't help. Being diminutive.
The
makes
diminutive
it harder
man.
To be great. Well, Maradona might have a thing or two
Messi.
To say about that. Anyway, this is all a preamble. This is all chatter, because it's time for My Sins Corner. Welcome back to For My Sins Corner, Charlie. You've been champing at the bit to have another
really
crack
have.
At this. I don't know if you picked up on it, but For My Sins Corner is in a bit of a lull. We're in the doldrums at the moment. Tactics, there's lots of reactive tactics going on. People are second-guessing each other. I think we need to get back to the real pureness of For My Sins Corner, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, especially the one where there wasn't one. There's been all sorts
going
of
on about that.
There's been all sorts of shenanigans.
That was the Italia 90 of For My Sins Corner for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly that.
Before today's For My Sins Corner, I have a story from Joe Jeffries. He says, I was at the pool today, scudding along in the medium lane. I notice a queue stacking up behind me, which is unusual. I start sensing some impatience. Between lengths, a woman glides over. You're actually in the fast lane, love, for your sins. You can't reverse For My Sins someone, can you, says Joe. Dave, what's going on here? That's a weird thing to say to someone, isn't it? Especially like a complete stranger. In passing.
And in that context as well, in that situation, it doesn't weird sort of passive-aggressive sort of manoeuvre.
If anything, it looks like it was an attempt, Charlie, to kind of smooth it over at the end of the sentence, just to say not quite sound so abrupt.
Yeah.
So she was obviously thinking of something, but that's all that came out.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't think you can, for your sins, someone. That is for you to say. It's a because it's a confessional, isn't it? You can't tell someone what to confess.
She doesn't know enough about him, that's true. But a lovely little intro in today's classic For My Sins Corner. This came via hundreds of you, actually. It's from University Challenge this week. And let's do it. Let's recap the rules, of course. You are going to utter the immortal words as soon as you think they are about to be uttered in this clip from popular culture. Let's do it.
Playing on behalf of around 30,000 students... with an average age of 26, let's meet the Sheffield team again.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hoare. I'm originally from North Yorkshire and I'm studying for a Master's in Evolution and Behaviour.
Hi, I'm Andrew Fisher. I'm originally from Newcastle, but I now live in Sheffield and I'm doing a PhD in Pure Maths.
And this is their captain.
Hi, I'm Lewis Jones. I'm from Haverhill in Suffolk and I'm studying journalism for my
sense. Oh, yes! no!
Blackpool, I'm studying geography.
Should have been the geography guy, if anything.
Oh, I wish listeners could see. He looked so For My Sinsy as well. As soon as I saw him start the tour, it was like, yeah, this guy. And he had a little smirk at the start. He could just, everything about him was For My Sins.
Funny you should say that, Charlie. Some other people picked up on the smirk and the sort of the general knowingness of the delivery of For My Sins there and suggested he may have been or may be a football cliches listener. I looked him up. I found him on Twitter. Doesn't follow me, but that doesn't preclude him from listening to the podcast. Would be strange, though. I'd prefer it the other way around. But yeah, I mean, it's all right, isn't it? It's a good delivery.
Yeah,
I'm so annoyed. I've got the yips. I could feel it was about to come, but he actually got it out quite quickly. There wasn't much of a gap.
I think
there wasn't much time.
These,
yeah,
some of these challenges are getting a little bit tricky. That was very much a stalemate again. Let's have a follow-up, quick one, an easier one for you. This is all about who's quicker on the draw. This is from the natural habitat of Popmaster.
Much more comfortable with Ken.
Easier place to go.
So we know a bit about you then. You're a big West Brom fan.
Yeah, home and away seem to get hold of the last 30 years from Sheffield. So for my
friends, what is wrong with you lot?
Times at the moment,
I'm handing it to you on a plate.
Of course, that's all the only
Charlie. Charlie sort of went half in. Put me off.
I did a couple of.
But he didn't say it when you expect him to say it.
Yeah,
he's clearly trailed the West Brom.
Yeah. I thought he'd say it with the West Brom bit. Then the whole home and away thing happened.
I don't know what we're going to do.
I think we've just got to get some shots away. Yeah. We're trying to walk it in. Just got to gamble a bit more here, I think.
Absolutely. My goodness. Another one next week, I hope. God knows, we are in crisis. Anyway, this came from Jacob. This is Alistair Bruce Ball on 5 Live during Argentina versus Poland. With the smoothest segue from football-adjacent chatter back to football commentary I have heard in years.
Control the ball on the left-hand side and going through all those permutations and discussions, even interrupted the game of World Cup Scrabble we had going on in the apartment this afternoon. Throw in for Argentina on the right. I recommend that, by the way, as a game to anyone who likes their Scrabble. Just do a World Cup themed Scrabble. So anything connected to the World Cup, you can play. Polish surnames are going to score you absolutely tons of points.
Do you have enough letters, though, for that?
Krakowiak, Zielinski, McAllister to Messi. Fewer points. Lovely ball for Messi. Play through to Taliafico.
That is
it's like
elite.
A football commentator Radio 1 essential mix. It's perfect.
That is
stunning.
So good, yeah.
You can't plan for that, Dave, can you?
Alistair Bruce Ball and Chris Sutton, very much leaning into that sort of slightly comedy, sort of odd couple double act sort
the
of
champion
thing.
Champion McCoist of the radio waves, aren't they?
But pulling it off nicely. And yeah, straddling both the football and the banter there effortlessly.
I have to say, Charlie, World Cup Scrabble does sound really good fun.
Yeah, I know. When he was saying that, I was like, that does sound good. Like any games, I like it because there'd be a few that would be quite borderline as to how tenuous you could go, whether they were really World Cup related.
Yeah, depending on how strict you get on that, I do wonder if World Cup Scrabble would become a war of attrition. I mean, how many options really are available to you? But I'd love to have a go. Football cliche Scrabble. That's a board game idea. That's a bit of merchandise option for us over the next... I'm sure they wouldn't mind us nicking the intellectual rights to that. Next up, Brazil versus South Korea. Now, there was a lot of fuss towards the end about Brazil bringing on third-choice goalkeeper Weverton in the 80th minute. Charlie, I put it to you that this is the first ever equally classy and unclassy touch in football history. Because it was considered classy because... Tite was giving the 26th member of his squad some World Cup minutes. But then, of course, there was the inevitable reaction to this, which was it was disrespectful to South Korea to bring on your third-choice goalkeeper for no reason whatsoever. Is it a good, solid 50-50 split for you here?
Ooh, that is good. I mean, in a knockout game, that does feel a little bit piss-takey.
That's true.
If it's your final group, although I guess the group, then it's more, but there's another team you could be hurting here. So that is probably worse. You're not really affecting anyone by doing it. What would I expect? I would expect the reaction to be more hostile than classy touch. Okay. Unless there was a particular reason and it was like, you know, Weverton's had a hard time of it recently. What a legend for bringing him on.
What minute did he come on to the pitch?
80th.
I suppose you want to, if you are doing it, you want to kind of give him some actual minutes, some chance of actually participating in a match. I was going to say you could just bring him on in the 89th minute, but then that's a bit disrespectful to the player.
Yeah, yeah, it's more of a gesture then, isn't it? I mean, once you get as far back as the 80th, Charlie, and let's assume without researching that there was at least 3, 4, 5 minutes of injury time. That's a good, solid amount of time for a goalkeeper to get under his belt. And at that point, you could argue that Alisson was being rested. Like that's 15 minutes of him not having to be alert and ready to be called upon and all that sort of stuff. So that's resting. That qualifies. It's fine.
I wonder when that will become a thing, resting goalkeepers. You'd think there will be a point at which for the reasons you're saying, you know, the concentration actually is exhausting for a keeper.
All that clapping.
And, yeah, all the clapping, all the sort of standing on your feet and looking and alert. But I can see if you are of that mind that it would seem beyond the pale and, you know, just not fair on South Korea.
I mean, there's no real logic to it, but you are sort of, in a football sense, kind of programmed, Dave, to find it disrespectful, aren't you? Because it's just, you know, it's an unusual thing that was done without any kind of sporting merit. So it immediately then becomes disrespectful and shouldn't be allowed. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
I don't think it's right to consider it disrespectful, actually. They were 4-1 up. Mm. It's obvious why they're doing it.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I certainly don't think it is.
Not
but
a problem.
I think that for that school of thought.
It's not like they were doing, you know, keep-ups and, you know, pulling out all the tricks, taking the piss out of Korea. Like, there was still a match going on, but they just decided to put a new goalkeeper on. Like, and if you've got five subs, you can do it. I think it's fine.
Perhaps we are spending too much time talking about this, when in fact this was the real highlight of Brazil versus South Korea.
The Qatari authorities are beginning to try to promote some of these areas as potential tourist venues. So having read the blurb trying to attract future visitors to this particular area, I can tell you that the major tourist attraction in their view is a desalination plant.
A desalination plant?
And if that's not enough for you...
It's not heavy in my agenda, that one.
It's also the headquarters of the Qatari Table Tennis Association.
Oh, I'm up for that. Yep. Don't mind about a TT.
Very good.
How McCoist is that? I have absorbed so much McCoist over the last 8 years in a World Cup context, Dave, that I knew exactly what he was going to say at the end there and exactly how he was going to say it. Don't mind a bit of TT.
And we should point this out just to anyone that wasn't watching the match, and obviously no one can't hear the clip now. He said that as the camera cut to the Brazilian manager. Effortless from McCoist.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that whatsoever.
That's the gag, surely.
I don't know.
Oh, I don't think,
I think it is. It's his name.
No way.
If it is, that's amazing. I think that's coincidence.
I don't think the brain works quick enough. I don't think.
I think he does. No, he's super sharp. Why would he? He wouldn't call table tennis TT in any other circumstance.
I think he would. I think it might be what footballers call it.
Yeah,
that's what they call it at Talk Sport.
He said it just after the pitcher turned to the to TT on the bench.
No. If he,
he's
if
not
he
Alistair
has.
Bruce Ball.
I think you're doing McCoist a disservice there.
Let's return briefly to the theme of goalkeepers getting minutes and those sorts of thresholds. Listener Michael Cox was watching Spain versus Morocco when Morocco just hung up a cross into the box.
Mazraoui hangs it, Simon watching it. In the series, decent in the air, but well taken from the Athletic Club goalkeeper.
Yeah, Simon. Very comfortable for him. Nice for the goalkeeper to get a good feel of the ball early on in the game. Come for a good cross, positive.
John Hartson there on ITV giving the customary co-commentator's observation that it's good for a goalkeeper to get an early touch of the ball. Problem was, Dave, this was in the 15th minute of the game. That's too late.
Does feel too late. Do we know how many touches he'd had before that?
I can tell you that was his sixth touch of the ball in the first 14 and a bit minutes. Three of those touches were goal kicks. One of them was a short pass from open play, and the other one was a simple throw out of the ball to get Spain going on the attack. So, Charlie, the other side of the coin here, you could argue, is this was his first kind of real test of the game, but I still worry about the clock side of things.
That's meaningful.
Surely his nerves would have been settled by the 15th minute, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, 15 minutes is... That's a third of the half, isn't it? It's not the sort of...
It is.
Obviously, it's different for goalkeepers, but if you were an outfielder, that would feel like an age before before getting a touch, wouldn't
feel
it?
Feel of the ball.
A nerve settler after 15 minutes. It probably is a touch late, yeah, even as a keeper.
But then again, Dave, Unai Simon does feel like a little bit like a... He looks a little bit like a get him under pressure, get that ball in the air and see how he deals with it kind of keeper. So
it was a little bit mitigation. He was backpedaling as well to get the ball. Like, it wasn't, he didn't sort of confidently come out and jump into the ball. It was one that was a bit tricky. Yeah. And he pulled it off well. So from that perspective, like, it does kind of make sense what Hartson is saying. But as you say, the clock element, yeah, not there.
Didn't really stand Unai Simon in good stead for the rest of this game, because Morocco, of course, went on to beat Spain on penalties. A question from Rich Wynn, Charlie, says, everyone described Ashraf Hakimi's penalty as a Panenka, but I don't think a Panenka can almost bounce before it hits the net or have such a low trajectory. Was his penalty a Panenka? And what is the definition of a Panenka? Seems a little bit too much of a mainstream debate for us to have, but what I would say here is that I think it was a Panenka in spirit. The execution almost becomes secondary here. The intent is probably more important.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I did have the same thought when I watched it. Was it a pure Panenka? Because it is a bit unusual, the trajectory of the ball and the way it lands. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, because there's that debate, isn't there? That Zidane one in the World Cup final of 2006, which is a Panenka, but is very high and hits the bar and bounces down, which makes
almost
it look
too good.
Yeah, exactly, and kind of the opposite of this one. But I think you're right. I think it is what you're trying to do, and he certainly did that.
Yeah, Dave, we don't want to get too hung up on sort of the way that the ball sort of gently goes down the back of the net or anything like that. It is essentially still the same hoodwinking of a goalkeeper, isn't it?
Exactly. If you feint to hit the ball but then pull out a small chip at the last minute, as you say, it's Panenka in spirit.
Yeah,
because you're not going to be able to get it the exact same perfect trajectory every single time. But he tried. He went for a Panenka.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't pull it off in the same way that he'd like to. But it's still in there. I think it's one of those rare occasions where intent is more important than execution in terms of our definition for it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Great one from this, from Robbie Michael. This is one of those situations where I ended up on the ITVX platform for much longer than I wanted to, ran out of patience watching fucking adverts and gave up looking for the clip. But he says, not World Cup related, but on Coronation Street this week, Dave, Steve McDonald was insulted when Tim Metcalf described him as an armchair fan of Weatherfield County. I think this confirms, incredibly, Weatherfield is a top-end championship team at minimum, if enough of their games are on TV, for someone to be called an armchair fan. I mean, I'd say I don't watch Coronation Street enough, Dave, to know whether they've actually sort of placed them in the football pyramid, but this is probably the biggest hint we would have ever had.
Well, the last time we spoke about Weatherfield County was to do with Kevin Webster was reacting to being shown the kit, the new kit, the third kit in the garage.
Yeah. And
again, that sort of suggests that they're a big enough club to have a proper sort of social media presence and a kit launch. But yeah, this is further evidence that they are a decent outfit, I think. And even, like you say, a minimum championship. Unless they're getting into the weeds of the old I follow business.
Muddies the waters of armchair fan,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Oh no, in a wider context then, Charlie, could you be an armchair fan of, say, a League Two club? Is that possible?
Clearly, you know, literally that means TV. I do wonder if you're a club that level that does extend to just someone who goes to, you know, a decent number of games, isn't obsessive necessarily. Whether
no, I don't think it is. That's casual. That's just a bit more of a casual supporter. Armchair suggests that you do quite vociferously support the team, but
just from the comfort of your armchair.
From the comfort of your armchair slash your own home. Like, it's almost as never going to the games.
Mm.
Would this technicality allow you to be a League Two armchair fan, Dave? If you react to games sort of feverishly via Soccer Saturday, does that count?
So as they appear on the
two instances that your team get mentioned on Soccer Saturday, if you go mental enough about it, does that make you an armchair fan? I think that could do.
It's the same sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah,
we've ignored local radio as well. I mean, does radio not make you an armchair fan? Is that too cool, too cerebral?
But I think there is still an element of dedication there. You are taking the time to get to actually listen on the local radio. You can be out and about. Armchair fan suggests that you're lazy,
blinkered,
sitting watching your laptop. Live text updates appearing and getting really annoyed, or watching your team's Twitter account and getting really annoyed from your armchair.
This is a very good point. Modern technology is widening the potential to be an armchair fan down the UK football pyramid. This is a PhD thesis for somebody.
It's almost similar to being like a backseat driver. If you're an armchair fan, you're someone you're sniping from the sidelines. You've got an opinion, but you don't go to the game, so you're perceived not to be able to deserve that opinion.
Shouldn't be a pejorative term anyway. I quite like the idea of being an armchair fan. There's nothing wrong with it. Not these days. It's fine.
It's all part of the hierarchy, though, isn't it? It's like how those who go home and away would look down on just the sort of Johnny-come-lately home season ticket people.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be a hardy soul, Charlie. I'd love to be a hardy soul, but I haven't got it in me, just in any sense. I haven't got the stamina for a sort of 9-hour away trip day in bad jeans with a rolled-up programme hanging out my pocket with a kid in tow, worried about how much I've spent that day all in. It's not for me. This is about as far away from that context as we could get. This is from Andre Robel, who reports from the world of esports. He says, last month in Copenhagen, there was a Counter-Strike Global Offensive tournament, and they played a kind of exhibition match before the finals, the real event started. And as a surprise at the halftime, this happened.
They need some help. They need somebody that can step up and turn the tide for Team Denmark. Anybody willing at this point in time. Oh, but what's that? On the stage, there is a sixth man. It's not a man at all. It's an angel instead. They have the savior. It's Niklas Bentner. Danish national team fame of Arsenal, a football legend here. And he is suiting up to save Team Denmark. What a fantastic time.
I swear, Dave, this is the same guy who was doing the countdown before that game the other day.
He does have the same sort of intonation. Yeah.
I wonder. Surreal situation. I guess Bentner's got a lot of time on his hands, Charlie.
Yeah, and to be fair, the audience looks absolutely delighted. They're thrilled that he's there. So good luck to him.
He got into online gaming, Counter-Strike Global Offensive in particular, during lockdown, apparently, Dave. And so he's big into it. He's still sort of beginner level, but that made him kind of a viable candidate as a star guest for this situation.
He's very on brand for Bentner, isn't it?
I think. I guess so.
To be an operator in this world, I think it fits in with that sort of, well, his sort of whole persona of kind of not really being that bothered about football.
Yeah, I suppose it lends itself to cult status.
Mm,
a little bit more as well. Okay. Elsewhere from the continent, Charlie, Jarmo Willems writes and says, I was listening to your recent podcast about nil all, and it got me thinking about whether it works in another language, which got me to the realisation that in English, we always say 4-0 or 2-0, regardless if the home or away team wins the game. Whereas in Dutch and German, you always announce scores in the order of the home away teams. 0-4, 0-2, if the away team has won. Strange that never happens in English. And it is a bit strange. Mm. But then I sort of do see it every now and then. I see it in copy every now and then at The Athletic. And I sort of have to reverse it back and say, well, no, you don't do that. That's weird.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's true that actually you could be, in copy, it would be a more concise way. If, you know, a 2-0 away win, you could just write a 0-2 win. It would save you a word. It's just a convention that it's built up that it look good. But I agree, because when I see that, it's like, oh, that looks horrific. But yeah, that's just sort of because that's what we're used to.
Could you imagine, Dave, sort of Sunday afternoon, getting into the pub, someone asks you how Ribblesdale Rovers got on, you said, 0-3. Could you do it?
No.
It's not a massive departure. I feel like you could style it out. 0-3. No one would pick you up on it. Not outside of these walls.
Nil 3 today. But
you'd have to have a nil involved. If it was like, you wouldn't say 2-4, would you?
Yeah, exactly. That'd be God. Weirder. Yeah,
that's awful.
Another 1-3 today.
Just another example of how inflexible we are in this country when it comes to the language of football. Next up, Nifty Palms asks Charlie, what constitutes a conveyor belt of talent? One talent at regular intervals, like in the Generation game, not multiple at once. I don't think a golden generation can come off the conveyor belt of talent if they all break through at the same time. This is a very fair point.
That's a good
Stacking
point.
All your stuff up on the Tesco conveyor belt, all up and vertically, and then it all coming at once. No good.
That's more like Talent Factory, which is closely linked to this. Yeah, I think conveyor belt, often you're talking about the same position as well. Like they've just got, you know, they've got a conveyor belt of great strikers at this club. And that's just, you know, sort of one after the other, year on year. Like I remember Atletico Madrid seemed to have this conveyor belt of really good strikers for a time. Not that they necessarily produce, but they just seem to find them and replace one with another.
Whoa. If you're not producing them, then it's not your conveyor belt, is it?
Well, you're still buying stuff. I mean, it's different.
It is different. It's different. You're importing.
Yeah.
Rather than production.
You sometimes hear like the academy production line is a sort of twist on the theme. But in terms of like golden generation can't all come from a conveyor belt of talent, I'm not sure about that. I think they could.
They don't have to be the same age, do they, for a start?
No, there's a range, but they could all have come through the same factory.
I'm going to put another spanner in the works here, Dave, because a golden generation is an international thing. It's a national team thing, like England's golden generation of the mid-2000s or whatever. Belgium. But you don't have conveyor belts at international level. Conveyor belts are for clubs, though, right?
Yeah, the clubs
Even
are the
Spain
producers.
Spain don't have a conveyor belt.
Exactly. Clubs produce the talents. They are making the goods at the La Masia factory.
Yeah.
And Spain just reap the rewards. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But yeah, great question from Nifty Palms, particularly like the generation game analogy there. Perhaps an easier question for you now, Charlie. Mr. SK Primary says, how many goals can a player bag? Singular? Is there an upper limit? Or what instinctively is your answer here?
Well, I remember often in Sunday League, like, oh, did you bag?
Really?
Which would mean more singular, more just did you score?
Just a dangling verb.
Did you bag? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
did
God.
He bag? Yeah,
wow.
He bagged. Yeah, bagged. I mean, bag to brace is kind of the one that is... I think beyond that, I mean, you wouldn't say
you
bagged
that trick.
You think you would?
I think you could probably bag 4 goals, actually.
I'm going to read you a message that I sent to one of my WhatsApp groups whilst watching Portugal the other night. This is lovely stuff. Drop Ronaldo, win 6-1 with his replacement bagging a hat-trick.
Oh, it's fine. Now you've read it out in the wild. I think it's absolutely fine. I think bagging, there probably isn't really an upper limit. I mean, you probably wouldn't say bagged 7 because it doesn't really do justice to the achievement. But if you did it in a, you know, shitty Sunday League game where you'd won 13-0, you probably could say bagged 7. So you have to maybe think about it as a proportion of the total amount and the context of the game. But let's go back down to the lower end of the spectrum, Dave. Can you bag one? You can bag one. Bagged a goal. He bagged a goal. That's all right, isn't it?
Bagged a goal. I think it doesn't sound quite as nice. It's probably not used as much in copy. I don't know why, but it just... But I think it stems from bagging... I know he's referenced bagging a brace. That's just kind of a nice sort of bit of alliteration.
Yeah,
and it all goes from there.
Caveat, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's sort of... It has taken on a bit more of a life of its own. As Charlie said, it can be used in different ways as well now. But I think bagging one is probably the worst of all of them, really.
Yeah, fair enough. I am still slightly concerned about Charlie's post-Sunday League conversations about did you bag? I mean, where do you stop? Charlie, did you plunder? Did you plunder?
Well, I've discovered some more stuff because I've just searched bagged in my WhatsApp history.
Right.
Someone bagged a couple of assists.
Ooh.
They've claimed.
They're baggable now. Are they baggable now? Maybe they are.
Maybe.
They're a thing.
But you rarely hit...
Sunday League teams count them now, don't they? So
yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Bagged and assist.
Who bagged? There are quite a few who bagged.
Oh, I don't like it. Maybe I'm too much of a purist at this level, but no, don't like bagged. This is from listener Mikhail, who unearthed some vintage Peter Drury here. This is the man himself reporting on the FA Cup in 1998 on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Liverpool won't be winning the FA Cup in 1998. They were beaten 3-1 at Anfield by Coventry. Peter Drury.
Well, how thirstily we sip from the cup of chaos here, of random gales, chattering teeth, clattering tackles,
all of it flavoured by the indescribably rich essence of the day, the white-knuckled knowledge that winner took all. The absence of genuine minnows notwithstanding, this was archetypal. Liverpool live and luxuriant going forward, but fraught and frequently caught at the back, jittery James jangling the nerves of those in front of him. Huckabee's hair-raising pace terrified them. Dublin's doughty demeanour never let them rest, even after Jamie Redknapp's free kick gave them an early lead. Thereafter, bade on by a vast following, Coventry pressed on to surely their greatest cup victory since 1987 and all that.
Hey.
Huckabee threw through to equalise right on half-time, and rebounds from his shots allowed Dublin and Telfer to win it, and suddenly a horizontal Houchin, Kilcline with the cup, Sillett bouncing up and down, became meaningful memories again.
Arsenal have got to go to Vale Park now. Ron Jones.
My alliteratometer has absolutely exploded there. This is sort of grassroots Drury, Charlie. This is great, isn't it?
This is amazing, yeah. It's also interesting because his voice is a little bit different. It's a bit
BBC, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It just sounds that little bit more da-da-da-da-da. And that may be partly the time period as well.
It's like early Keys. They were all talking like that, yeah. All a bit posh back in the day.
Yeah, it's really funny. But yeah, I mean, you can see the Drury DNA writ large.
Exactly. It's all there. He's really going for it. And it's kind of like, I suppose, like a band or something who's just full of talent but bursting at the seams, and they're just chucking it all out there. And then like three or four albums later, they just kind of settle into the rhythm a bit more. They know when not to go to the well too often.
Just got alliteration after alliteration. And Dave, I hope you picked up on the Coventry City's 1987 and all that. That's just very solid and all that, isn't it?
Exactly. And that is why it was sent to us. So it was sent us in response to that section of the podcast earlier this week. And there were a lot of responses to that. And many of them centered around a play or a book called 1066 and all that?
Yeah, history like, book.
Yeah. Cited as the first sort of example of it all. But
that makes sense, doesn't it?
But yeah, that was a great example. Really good. Love that.
Yeah. Do you know what, Charlie? Throughout the World Cup so far, we've stopped short of picking on our US cousins for their coverage of the tournament. But I couldn't resist this time. This is from listener Vadim Firminov, who is watching the Fox broadcast of Croatia versus Japan in the US. And he says the commentator said his number is up in reference to a Japanese player getting ready to come onto the pitch during extra time.
Ooh.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
No.
Because there's an extra connotation to your numbers up. It's like it has deeper meaning than that. It's essentially like your time is up.
Yeah.
That's it for you, and you're coming off. Not you're coming on.
Because there's an element of doubt, because it's the board going up and you turn around and think, whose number's going to pop up? My number's popped up. I'm off. Whereas if you're waiting to, of course your number's going to come up.
You already know.
You're there. Yeah.
That's right. They didn't think about this, have they? It's very disappointing. And indeed, elsewhere on Fox, this was Portugal versus Switzerland. This observation from Ollie Mintz-Lowe. And this touches on something we were talking about recently as well.
Four of the six goals Portugal have scored. Outswinger from here. Pepe! 2-0! The old man gets his goal!
Charlie, how do you feel about the his goal usage here? Because it almost sounds quite patronized. Like the old man, go on, get your goal.
Yeah, I got a couple of DMs about this after our gets his goal discussion. Yeah, it's like it's his testimonial. The old man gets his goal and in his farewell valedictory performance.
Yeah,
that is not the kind of gets his goal that we were talking about.
Yeah, it doesn't meet our threshold, does it, Dave?
No, I don't think it does. It was a 6-1, obviously, in the end, but that was the second goal. If he'd scored the sixth, it could have been a slight variation on the getting in on the act situation.
Yeah,
but
needs to have been knocking at the door, didn't he?
Or if it was like a, I mean, it was like a record breaking performance. In some sense, wasn't it? I think it was the oldest outfielder in a knockout Champions League game or something, a knockout World Cup game. But even so, I don't think that's enough to make it a
no. No, it's not. It's not a what an evening. Yeah, it's all about his occasion tonight.
Same commentator apparently then later after Switzerland scored to make it 4-1 said game on.
Ooh,
that's not game on.
Well, I mean, there was some UK based disagreements about that. Jonathan Pearce on the BBC highlights said game on when Switzerland scored to make it 4-1.
Right.
No way. 60-something minute.
Too far. That's barely a murmuring, that.
Yeah.
You take it down to two goals.
On ITV, said immediately it was a consolation.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in between for me. I mean, it's not game on, obviously, but it's not really a consolation either, is it, at that time?
No, you've got to get it down to two minimum to be game on,
okay.
I think.
But was it a consolation?
For what was the minute? 60 minutes.
60-odd.
58.
4-1.
Yeah.
Oh, 58. Okay.
I think it's just, it's in
cometh the hour.
Yeah.
Always happens, doesn't it? It's a shame. It's a shame. Anyway, listener Harvey Orzorst writes in, said he was watching Manchester United's friendly versus Cadiz on Wednesday night, and on the half hour, Alvaro Negredo skewed a clearance out for a corner. A co-commentator accused him of making an attacker's clearance. Are we having that? A forwards tackle, fair enough, and a defender might end up seeing their name in lights when ballsing up a finish. But an attacker's clearance, says Harvey Orzorst, is plain wrong, as if the finesse of a clean contact is above their pay grade. What says the panel? Dave, how do you feel about attacker's clearance? I don't like it as a variation on the theme. Doesn't really tell me much.
No, because a clearance is one of the most basic things you can do. You're just kicking the ball in whatever direction you're facing. Mm. Anyone can do it. There's no art to it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an attacker's thing necessarily, but there are some players you do who get a bit twitchy and do what Negredo has done there. But I don't know if that's specific to position. I think it's more a kind of temperamental thing.
I think the only close relative this I would allow, and bearing in mind this was half an hour into this game, this wouldn't even qualify anyway, as if Negredo had been doing that all game. And then eventually he says, and who's back there again? Alvaro Negredo. And that's the only related device I think you could employ at that stage. So yeah, not happy with that either. All sorts of things going on this week that we're not happy with. But let's have a little bit of Keys and Grey Corner. Sunday. Right, thanks to listener Fraser, Charlie. Would you like to hear Richard Keys talking about arse cheeks?
I think I already have, but I would love to hear it again.
No one drunk, lying all over the streets, spewing up here, abusing people there.
Letting a firework off between the cheeks of his arse.
Yeah,
else.
That kind of thing. So...
cheeks of his arse.
So good.
Sounded like they'd had a bit of a heavy night, ironically, given the subject matter there.
Yeah. Absolutely. Elsewhere, I stumbled across the first ever Monday Night Football on Sky Sports on YouTube. Wow. Just the pre-match.
That algorithm knows you well.
Yeah, I know. So much to enjoy in there. I mean, you could really sort of almost taste the earnestness of Sky to try and show off their new shiny product and the kind of bemused nature of all the players and managers involved saying, what the hell's this? What are we involved in? This is mad. It's Manchester City versus Queen's Park Rangers, August 1992. And of all the weird things that are involved in the first sort of 40 minutes of the broadcast, the slightly dodgy remarks about the cheerleaders in the centre circle with Chris Waddle and Andy Gray in the studio, but also an interview with the referee before the game, which, you know, if you think about it, it's something we're calling for these days. Some people from certain quarters, Charlie, are calling for, you've got to get the referees out and get in front of the camera and explain their decisions, right?
Massively. This is genuinely revolutionary stuff.
But this was pre-match, though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So...
can you explain how you're going to referee?
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, people who want referees to be hauled in front of the cameras, because they're going to be asked questions like this. This is the lowest key interview I've ever heard.
Let's go and meet our match official tonight, Martin Bodenham, who's with David Livingston.
Yes, we're in the inner sanctum here, the referee's room, with the match official for tonight, Martin Bodenham. Martin, we're always trying to get behind the man in black or the man in the many colours now. Tell us a bit about yourself. It lists you in the programme as a guest house proprietor.
Yes, I'm 42 years of age, and I've lived in Cornwall for 5 years. I've been refereeing on the league for somewhere in the region of about 12 years, and spent most of it refereeing in the Brighton area of Sussex, and moved to Cornwall 5 years ago.
Cornwall, so how does that fit in with the many locations in the league?
Well, it's certainly different regarding travelling. One has to work out, you know, what the movements are on the road, of course, with holiday traffic. August and September is a bit hairy, but from then onwards, not too bad at all. But it's a question of careful planning.
That's a good one. Come on.
Just a few minutes ago, we saw that you had a bit of confusion with the socks for the evening. Is this all part of the fancy new outfits the referees are wearing?
What about?
Well, not regard to that one, no. It was more the clash of sock colours for the two teams. So we just had to make sure that there wasn't going to be a problem during the game.
Well, we've seen some natty outfits so far from the referees. What colour tonight?
Being green tonight.
Martin Bodenham, our match official, on our first Monday night football evening. It's Manchester City and Queen's Park Rangers tonight. Coming next, live from Main Road, all the team news. Don't go away.
And that's why, Charlie, we don't have referees being interviewed on live football broadcasts anymore.
Martin Bodnam,
What was the low light of that interview? Was it just talking about the sort of travel infrastructure of Southwest England?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that was particularly bleak because that was where my mind went when he said he was from Cornwall. I did think, oh, that must be some big distances to travel. And then he was asked it. Oh, God, I'm boring.
The opening question where he said, oh, you're a guest house proprietor, aren't you? And he sort of said, yeah, and gave a little bit of a bio about himself. It sounded like sort of mini introduction that they were used to give on like Blind Date.
Yeah.
Just sort of trying to sum himself up in 30 seconds. Bit about himself. But, oh, God. And you're right. That probably is it. From that moment forward, we'd never... I don't want another referee on my TV station ever again.
Yeah. That's it. That's what they would have said. Everyone just blinded by the lights on Sky Sports back then, it seems. If anyone was still listening, thank God. Dave, thanks for joining the adjudication panel today.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Charlie.
Thank you.
Thanks for everyone for listening, and we'll be back on Tuesday. Cheerio.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.